Hey, good morning. This is Doug Fields, CEO of the Institute of Healthcare Consumerism, and I want to welcome everyone to this segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio, and I'm actually joined here in the studio with my co-host, Brent Macy, our Managing Director. Good morning, Brent.
Good morning, Doug. How are you?
Well, I'm good now that we're back from snowy Minneapolis.
Yeah, that's
back,
right.
Back to warm Atlanta.
up in Minneapolis earlier this week, and want to thank all the great companies up there for their hospitality, the companies that we met with. Learned a lot about what's happening in this marketplace and how a lot of these companies are really innovating their solutions to serve the market.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about it on this program on a regular basis in this News and Views that there is sincerely a lot of positive innovation taking place in the free market, whether it's in the much talked about private exchange, defined contribution space, HSAs. We see HSAs evolving. You know, I think you're going to hear on this program today that an HSA is not necessarily the same, that there is differentiators, and there are value-added solutions that are being added. You know, looking at population health management, and you see companies making changes to, you know, blend a health and wellness solution with a transparency solution and the centerpiece engagement. I think engagement is an often talked about word right now, in some ways a little bit overused, but very important.
Right.
Because it is about engagement. Engagement in a wellness program, engagement in making your benefit choices. I mean, that's going to be the exchanges, challenges, and opportunity. We saw some very, very cool private exchanges that I think will provide the employers and their population with in some ways, a better benefit experience, you know.
Then you look at the brokers who are out there, and some of the tools around the exchanges that are taking place are really, you know, these brokers who, you know, are maybe evaluating the exchanges, they can come in and be provided with the tool to really help them show their employer clients, you know, why they should, one, move to the exchange.
Yeah, you know, next Friday, actually, I have the opportunity to speak on an exchange panel with here in Atlanta, Atlanta Health Underwriters Association, and I think that I'll be joined by two exchange providers. And I think the interesting part there is I think there's going to be there's a group of brokers that are very scared of what private exchanges are. But I think you and I saw even this week with some of the solutions that they can really be good broker tools to enable a broker to actually improve their professional presentation, you know, retain their clients, provide those clients and their employees with a good benefit experience, and actually gain new customers. Now, they may have to think a little bit differently about their revenue model, meaning their commission model, but in the long run, I think it can be a very profitable opportunity for them.
And I think, you know, some of the things that we heard this week in Minneapolis, that it's about simplicity and how, you know, the engagement comes into that, but it's about how do you provide a solution, you know, around the exchanges, but in other areas of consumerism too, that allow the process to be simple and to get people engaged, whether that's around an exchange or whether that's around a total population health management offering. How do you get people, you know, to walk before they run in a lot of instances?
Right. And, you know, it's an interesting time right now, too, and I think we hear this over and over again, and, you know, whether it's talking to solution providers, some leading consultants, brokers, advisors, or actually to employers themselves and employer groups, that employers are coming out of their seats right now. And we had an interesting comment this week that it is about healthcare consumerism, but it's about employer-driven healthcare to build healthcare consumerism programs for their employees and their population. And I thought that was very well said.
Very well said. And it's, you know, kind of define that a little further, the consumer-facing tools that those employers are building as part of their plan.
Right, and their partners, obviously, the health plans, these other solution providers, the brokers, advisors, consultants. But the employer is the stimulus. They're the driver right now because they have to do something, and most of them do want to retain their benefits, you know, but they just got to do – they've got to get their costs down, and they've got to develop better programs. They got to actually engage their employee population, you know, to participate on lowering their health care costs and improving their health and productivity.
Now, as we've mentioned on this radio program before, we did launch healthcare exchanges.com and or privatehealthcareexchanges.com actually is the web address. And if you're an exchange out there, make sure you go check it out. And if you haven't submitted your information to be listed there, feel free to do so. There's a couple different levels. There's a free level that you can do and come in and participate, you know, from a base level standpoint. And then there's two other tiered levels that allow you to really expand upon what your platform is, whether you are the actual exchange or whether you're the defined contribution technology partner that works with these exchanges. So we do urge you to take a look at that. I think we have over 70
private exchanges right now.
70 private exchanges listed there.
And again, to just reaffirm, the mission of privatehealthcareexchanges.com is married with the Institute. It's an added property from the Institute. Our print digital magazine, Healthcare Exchange Solutions, and our Exchange Solutions community is the information hub about the different moving parts of what's happening with private, public, defined contribution. And then the website goal is to be the definitive guide on defined contribution. So defined contribution providers will be showcased. Private healthcare exchanges and their various models will be showcased. So if I'm an employer in a region of the country, I can see which exchanges are offered in my area, which different exchange models are being offered as well, and make a decision on which ones I need to look at to serve my population. Same thing for brokers and TPAs and others looking at exchanges to work with.
And I think one of the things that, you know, we looked at when launching this property of the Institute was we were hearing a lot about making sure the employer chooses the right exchange that's right for their employee population, and really started to think, gosh, this is going to be an Oklahoma land grab, and there's going to be a plethora of companies coming at this market to provide this solution, because in a lot of ways it's pretty turnkey for some of the technology players out there to do this with their already existing platforms. And with so many options, how do you give an employer and or broker who is looking at these a true guide at what's in each of these, because they're all going to be distinctly different.
Right. That's exactly right. And, you know, here we are, you know, today is our kind of an extension that today is our second of our two-part series on celebrating the 10-year anniversary of HSAs. We're going to continue that into IHC Forum West, where we've got some really excellent educational programs led by Roy Rantham on one, and Kevin McKechnie of ABH's Council on another, and we'll have a nice little party with an opening reception. But the point of that is, you talk about exchanges, is HSAs. We'll hear our guest today talk about it. HSAs are showing up pretty well in exchanges, and we think they're going to show up pretty well in these private exchanges. In fact, one of our League of Leader members, John Young, yesterday over lunch yesterday in Minneapolis was saying, I think rightfully so, that you know, we look at the level of penetration and celebrate where HSA is. We in the business know it should be a lot more than that.
Right.
It's very conceivable exchanges are going to accelerate that, you know, fivefold, you know, potentially.
Right. And you alluded to IHC Forum West and celebrating the 10th anniversary of HSAs out there. And if you haven't, if you're the audience out there and you haven't signed up to attend, do encourage you to do that. A lot of innovations taking place in the market, but it's, as Doug mentioned on prior shows, it's about giving the market a snapshot into what just happened during this open enrollment time period and what worked, what didn't work, and then what do I need to look at moving forward with my plan design, or if I'm a broker or a consultant working with an employer, what are the trends out there? And the Institute, as we've always talked about, is we're the collaborative voice on healthcare consumerism and bringing all stakeholders together, whether I'm an employer, broker, consultant, TPA, health plan, or somebody in the business that's providing a solution. How do I stimulate discussion on, hey, what's the next step for my business, no matter what side of the table I sit on?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so we're excited about Forum West. We're excited about the timing. You know, if you're taking a minute to listen to our radio program right now out of your busy day, I think Brandon said, you know, take a look at what we're doing at Forum West, because if you want to be in a group of stakeholders who are coming together to collaborate on results from this open enrollment period and look into next year on what plans we could do, that it's the right place to be. Humbly saying, it's the right place to be.
And as we've talked about before, certified healthcare consumerism specialist. You can sign up to get that as part of your credentials. And doesn't matter which side of the table you sit on. You can be a solution provider in this space. You can be an employer, broker, consultant, and be able to get this certification and add it to your portfolio of continuing education. Moving forward to 2014, it's going to be here before we know it. 2014 IHC Forum and Expo is going to be in the May timeframe. And to those companies out there who are looking at possible speaking opportunities, we encourage you to go to the IHC website. It's www.theihcc.com. And click on the forum button, and you can actually submit a speaking topic for the program. We are getting to be heads down on that because we need to have the program together to drive attendees. So if you're looking at wanting to speak, we do encourage you to go submit your speaking topic there. And then if you're a solution provider out there and would like to sponsor the event, feel free to reach directly out to me, and I can send you the sponsorship information.
And we've also decided our IHC Forum West time frame for next year. We're going to be in the same time frame the first week of December. We're going to stay at the same place at Red Rock. You know, I think it's been good to us. It's a good location. So, you know, our 2014 dates have been set and are in place.
And as we look, you know, as we kind of think internally on topics for 2014, you know, Doug, where do you see kind of 2014 and leading into 2015, if you could look into your crystal ball?
Well, I think it's not just me. It's the market says it. I mean, 2015 is what is conceivably the big explosion time where – and not just exchanges. I think, you know, if exchanges work, as I think they're going to work this fall, you're going to see, you know, big increased adoption in 2015 plan year. I think we're trending where more and more employers are moving towards full replacement HSA programs. I think 2015 is a year for a lot of them to move that, you know, fully into place. We've got transparency solutions, you know, that are being adopted, and they'll play a big role as we move into 2014 and the 2015 plan year. So 2015 plan year for most employers and those working with them and the people serving them, I think it's going to be a big, big year, you know, of change and innovation.
If you look, and we were able to meet with a pharmacy benefit management company up in Minneapolis, and they talked about the consumer experience.
Yeah.
What do you see?
Gosh, that's an interesting word, isn't it? The consumer experience.
Yeah. What do you see with the consumer experience? I mean, because in a lot of ways, we've never had to become consumers of healthcare, but the market's moving that direction and moving quickly.
Well, that is healthcare consumers. I mean, right. You can develop the programs that are consumer facing, but you really have to take it that step further. And, you know, whether you're a PBM, whether you're an exchange, whether you're, you know, an HSA, you know, trustee and provider, a health plan, a transparency provider, you know, who's focused on engagement. It really is about, you know, that consumer experience, you know, enabling those employees and their families to really have really positive takeaways, whether it's making their plan choices, making the right health care decisions, being guided to make the right health care choice decision, making the right decisions about their health. Is what is that experience?
Mm-hmm. Now, moving in, talking a little about the program coming up today, we've got Dr. Stephen Neelman, who's with Health Equity, one of the first, you know, players into the health savings account space. And, you know, he's going to be on the program to talk about, you know, some of the things that they're doing at Health Equity and really talk to us about what he saw when he launched his business.
Yep.
And, you know, so that's going to be interesting. And then we've got a couple other guests joining us on the program. Todd Berkeley, who's been in the space as well for a long time, is going to talk about health savings accounts. And then Chris Riedel, who is with Aetna. She's going to be coming on the program with us to talk about what they're doing there at Aetna and what she's seen over the years around health savings accounts and specifically CDHP, so the actual plan piece of healthcare consumerism. So hope you stay tuned, and we'll be back to you with the next segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
This is Ron Bachman, Chairman of the Editorial Advisory Board for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. The IHC is a collaborative community for innovative health and benefit management solutions. If you're a stakeholder involved in any part of the healthcare system, you'll find the Institute the voice for healthcare consumerism. We invite you to see more about the organization at www.theihcc.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Hi, this is Brent Macy, Managing Director for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. If you're a solution provider in this marketplace, I'd like to talk to you more about our corporate membership program that will allow you to showcase your solutions in front of our audience who will be making decisions on what they're going to be putting in place surrounding their healthcare benefit packages in 2013 and beyond. Contact me at 770-296-7276 to learn more.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Hey, this is Doug Veal, CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, along with my co-host, Brent Macy. And welcome back to this segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. We're very pleased to have one of the leaders in this business and one of the original founding companies around HSAs on the phone with us today. We have joining us today Dr. Stephen Neelman, who is CEO and founder of Health Equity, which has become, which is kind of the oldest, and become one of the largest HSA trustees, now managing $1.2 billion in HSA deposits and partnering with over 2 million members, 23,000 employers, and 60 health plans. And Steve, it's a real pleasure to have you with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. How is it out in Salt Lake City today?
It's actually beautiful. It's going to be in the 60s, but there is snow on the mountain.
There's snow on the mountain. Okay, that's great. Well, Steve, for our audience, give them a little history on Health Equity. Kind of, you had this vision in 2002 as HSAs were just becoming a reality, and kind of fast forward us from there to today, please.
Well, I'm a physician, yep. And as I was going through my training, everyone I would speak with would say, you're going to be working for the government in 10 years. And that made me kind of, a little bit nervous, to be honest with you. And so I think that was in large part why I started the company. I felt like that America has a great legacy of coming up with solutions to very complex problems. And I think typically it's a combination of good government regulations that can allow for businesses to compete fairly, but then also it's the private enterprise that really drives the creativity. And so that was my goal in doing it. I had previously had some experience in the airline industry, and then I went to medical school, and so I had this interesting mix, I think, typically of someone that had really spent time in the consumer world, and then I tried to marry that with my medical background. And so that was the beginnings of it. Started a company in 2002. Mm-hmm. We actually started as a medical savings account company, as you know.
MSA, yeah.
And then we're very enthusiastic when we heard the rumblings in Washington for health savings accounts, went out and did some lobbying, and we did what we could to help push the legislation through. So by 2004, we were ready to go.
Then you fast forward today with the, with the help of Purple Power or Purple People, right? So tell me about Purple People, which is kind of looks like the cement that and the glue that makes things happen there.
Well, I recommend a great book to all of your listeners. It's called The Purple Cow.
The Purple Cow.
By an author named Seth Godin. And we read that book early in our history. And the whole message behind Purple Cow is that if you want to be well accepted in any community, specifically the business community, you need to do some things that are remarkable. And so from day one, when we started answering the phones, we did it 24/7. We realized that a lot of folks that would be going into a new environment, health savings accounts, that they would be doing so without a lot of knowledge. And whether it was at 2 a.m. or 2 in the afternoon, when they had a question, we wanted to be there for them. So that kind of started this remarkable approach to customer service, and we've continued it to this day. And I'm happy to tell you that just through our interactions with our members, we'll answer over 1 million calls. This year in 2013, wow. And actually over 25% of those calls will be after business hours or on weekends or holidays.
Now, Steve, when you're fielding all those calls, is there a couple questions that always come up, or is it a bunch of different questions that you guys kind of field?
Well, you can imagine a lot of the calls are just kind of the mundane questions around mundane questions around activating your credit card or debit card, or what's my account balance and things like that. But the more remarkable questions that come up is when someone calls us, oftentimes in the middle of the night, they're headed to an urgent care, or they're headed to a pharmacy, and it's the first time they'll ever have to use their health savings account, and they just don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to kind of interact with them, sometimes they'll even put the medical professional on the phone, and because the medical professional, up until even now, I mean, as you know, with about 10% of Americans having health savings accounts or those types of plans, it's still not widespread like we'd all like it to be. And so they'll ask us, how does this work? And I can't tell you the number of times where when the phone goes back to the member, or even when our medical professional is on the phone or our member services on the phone with the medical professional, they'll say, wow, that sounds like a great plan.
Hmm.
And so it's really just helping people understand how HSAs work, how they can benefit from them, and how, even though they're a little different, the doctors are still going to get paid and probably paid faster than they would under the old type of plans.
Steve, you know that we're in the middle of celebrating the 10th year anniversary of HSAs coming up here in December. We've got that's part of this radio series. We're going to extend that into our IHC Forum West in December, and we've got a major feature coming out next week in our November-December issue, where Roy and John Goodman and several have been interviewed. And you certainly are a cornerstone of all of that. And I think there's a lot to celebrate. I think HSAs have come through health reform a lot better than some of us thought it was going to be early on. And it's thanks to, companies and individuals like yourself, as well as Roy and Kevin and the team and many, many others. But we're still a very small, small piece of the whole pie, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And, a lot of this is just people learning more about it.
Mm-hmm.
We oftentimes will compare the adoption curve of health savings accounts to 401ks and even
mm-hmm.
HMOs. And I think we're doing okay if you compare from that lens. On the other hand, when I go to these open enrollment meetings with these large employers, and even though it sometimes makes so much financial sense, it never ceases to amaze me when I ask how many people in the audience have ever even heard of a health savings account after 10 years, and very few hands go up. And so we need to do more to educate. I often think we should start doing some public service announcements or something, because it truly is the best way to save money from a tax perspective. And I think it almost needs to become more of a public awareness campaign than a marketing campaign, if that makes sense.
Steve, one of the things that...
That's actually very interesting, Steve. Sorry, Brent.
One of the things that Doug and I have talked about before and would like your opinion on it is should the employer, if they're going to offer an HSA with a high deductible, should that be the only plan in a lot of instances? Not to... I know they want to provide choice, but sometimes people fall back to their old ways and go with what they're more familiar with.
Yeah, we actually have about, you mentioned in the intro, over 20,000 employers, and so we see it on all sides of this coin. And a good portion of those 20,000-plus employers are full replaced because they're small businesses.
Yeah.
And if you work for a small business, you're kind of all in it together. They're
mm-hmm.
all in the same lifeboat.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the larger businesses tend to be less inclined to go full replace, and they do offer a lot of options. I think in doing so, sometimes just because of inertia, I think inertia is actually Newton's first law, and it's really, really prevalent in health benefits, right?
Yeah.
People just do what they've done for the last 10 years, often to their financial detriment. And so I think that if an employer wants to offer choice, and by the way, we do have some very large employers that have been full replaced as well. So I think that if an employer wants to offer choice, they really need to focus on educating people. Otherwise, they're actually doing their people a disservice. And so if they're unwilling to take a very active role in education, then I think they probably should just go to a full replace.
Yeah, I think that's right. We were in some meetings this week in Minneapolis. I've been talking to some employer groups as well, Steve, and I think that, the single comment coming out of these meetings is that employers are getting out of their seats probably faster than they ever had, say, we've got to do something. And many are looking at private exchanges. I want to get kind of your feedback on that in a minute about private exchanges and public exchanges, the impact on HSAs. But the other message I hear, and I actually see it, is A lot of major employers have been on a three-year strategic plan, and that three-year strategic plan is leading them, you know, this fall in 2015 to a full replacement HSA program. I think they are saying, hey, that's the direction we need to get our population.
Yeah, so that's consistent with what we've seen. We're probably bringing on at least 50 employers this year that are, let's call it 5,000 or larger, or maybe even 10,000 or larger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a great year for us, but it is interesting because I spent a lot of time, and these are tech firms, hospital systems, retailers, and they're all saying the same thing. By 2016, we need to be full replace or pretty much full replace. And I think the reason for that is the data has come out of the National Business Group on Health and some of the other consulting firms that if you can get over half of your people in a health savings account plan, your total cost per your employees is going to be down by 10 to 20%, which is a remarkable statistic. Hmm. And so that's why they're doing this. Now, on the private exchange side, we can talk more about it. I think that that's a way for employers to wash their hands a little bit of the benefits. I think there's good and bad for the HSA movement. I think the good side is that when people are given a defined contribution and they send them to some sort of marketplace, a private exchange, they tend to buy HSA-type plans a lot more commonly than they would otherwise if they were just put in a regular benefits environment.
That's interesting. Steve, we got about a minute and a half to go. This time really flies, and I really enjoyed your time with us, and we could spend 30 to 40 minutes talking with you on this radio program about this. But I want to give you a chance to kind of leave our audience with, you know, several takeaways.
Great. So I would say takeaway number one is that even in this world of health reform, HSAs are alive, they're well, they're strong, they're growing. And I think to the credit of the current administration or whoever crafted this legislation, we do not believe that HSAs are negatively impacted. We actually think with the Cadillac tax looming that these are alive and well. I think number two is that education is critical. And if people are willing to take the time, and whether it's in webinars or face-to-face or more of a direct-to-consumer approach, that if people can just understand it, that I have great faith in the American people, they'll say, yeah, this is a wonderful opportunity. And then I think the last thing I would say as a physician is there's nothing more rewarding for me than when a patient comes in and they're actually in a health savings account plan and they're sitting in front of me in the exam room, and they actually are engaged in their health care. And they just want to make better choices. It's kind of like the lidocaine numb that's of a copay plan that they've had for 20 years is now gone, and they're willing to kind of wake up and ask better questions.
Steve, listen, I really, really appreciate your time today, and hopefully you can find some time out of your busy schedule and join us out in Las Vegas at IHC Forum West. Would enjoy seeing you there. And enjoy your weekend, and thanks again.
Thank you, gentlemen. Take care.
To the rest of our audience, stay tuned for the next segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
Hi, this is Brent Macy, Managing Director for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and I'd like to invite you to come join us December 5th and 6th at the Red Rock Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada for IHC Forum West. At the event, you will be able to benefit from 5 leading general sessions and 24 informative workshops that talk about all the moving pieces to healthcare consumerism. If you haven't signed up, we urge you to sign up at theihcc.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Hi, everybody. It's Don Zabkar, your host for Who Knew? We air Mondays 2 to 3 on America's Web Radio and then occasionally throughout the week. We've got some great subjects. This administration or this regime, as you know, is providing us with great material. So stay tuned. Check us out. America's Web Radio. It's Who Knew? With Don Zabkar.
Hi, this is Brent Macy, Managing Director for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. If you're a solution provider in this marketplace, I'd like to talk to you more about our corporate membership program that will allow you to showcase your solutions in front of our audience who will be making decisions on what they're going to be putting in place surrounding their healthcare benefit packages in 2013 and beyond. Contact me at 770-296-7276 to learn more.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to this segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. This is Brent Macy, joined with my host, Doug Field. And want to bring another leader onto the program with us for this segment here. We've got Chris Riedel, who is the head of product for national accounts at Aetna. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Thanks, Brent and Doug. Happy to be here.
Nice to have you here.
Now, Chris, you've been in the industry a long time, and you know, for this segment, you know, we're really looking at what you guys are doing there at Aetna. Kind of give us a snapshot of what Aetna does and the consumer-driven, around their consumer-driven plan side of things, and we'll dig a little deeper.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, Aetna has been offering consumer-directed plans for a long time. We were actually the first national insurer to offer consumer-directed health plans broadly. We've been doing that now for about more than a decade, and we've got about nearly 3 million members across both health reimbursement accounts and health savings accounts. So we do offer both products. Now, we've been a leader and an innovator in the development of these plans, and we have continued to make improvements in our offerings based on our experience and our research with employers and members. And you guys are probably aware that each year we conduct an annual study comparing the experiences of employers and members with our Aetna Health Fund plans, as opposed to those in more traditional or PPO-based plans. And our study is the longest-running study of its kind in the healthcare industry. And, in fact, we're currently finalizing our 10th annual study, which goes along nicely with your 10th anniversary here. And we hope to be releasing those results over the next couple of months.
Now, Chris, a lot of the, you know, we hear all the time in the marketplace that you look at more of the traditional plans out there, they're kind of staying stagnant, and the consumer-driven options, they're the ones that are really growing the most, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We are continuing to see growth across our plan offerings, and I think we're going to continue to see that happen even under, you know, the Affordable Care Act and in the exchange environment.
Chris, we were just talking to Dr. Neilman with Health Equity on the previous segment, and we also were just in Minneapolis this week talking with, you know, quite a few players up there, and you know, there seems to be a real movement towards full replacement. Do you see that among, you know, your current customer base?
You know, we see a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. Depends really on the employer strategy and what they're looking to achieve. We've studied the experience under both types of options, and you know what we've found that employers that completely transition to an Aetna Health Fund plan, they definitely see the most dramatic cost savings. Mm-hmm. But employers who, you know, are taking those first steps and looking to introduce consumer-directed plans with their population as an option are still seeing some significant reductions in their healthcare costs. So, for example, with our study, we reviewed and saw that employers that offered an Aetna Health Fund plan option saved more than $190 per member per year for members enrolled across all their health plan options. And we believe that's because they're beginning to create a culture of consumerism and a culture that encourages active management of health. So, again, we are seeing both, you know, plans being offered as an option, especially if they're transitioning and trying to help employees move into those types of plan designs, and also total replacement, depending upon what they're looking to achieve in terms of cost savings.
Hey, Chris, as you and the teams at Aetna look at, you know, the emerging public and private exchanges, we know all the fiasco happening around public exchanges, but let's just say that moves forward. But the emergence of private exchanges, where do you see that, particularly as it relates to, you know, the consumer-driven plans?
So I think that, you know, certainly not just my opinion. I think we're starting to see this demonstrated from the activity that we are seeing on the exchanges, is that CDHP plans are here to stay. Mm-hmm. Two of the primary goals of healthcare reform: lower healthcare costs and improve people's access to appropriate healthcare. And what we found with, you know, our decade of experience with these plans and research is that these plans can help achieve these goals. Mm-hmm. So the consumer-directed plans encourage people to become more engaged, more aware of their healthcare costs and costs associated with the care. And we anticipate we're going to continue to see more and more interest in these plans as employers are looking for ways to refine employee health tax benefits to avoid that 40% excise tax or Cadillac tax on high-cost coverage. So I do think CDHPs will be an appealing alternative on the exchanges as consumers make value comparisons. So, we're seeing that already with the early adoption from employers that are participating on the private exchanges.
Chris, you talked about the transition that employers are having to take their employee populations through. I kind of got a two-part question. What does the employer need to do to help their employee population kind of with this behavioral change? Because it's something that they're not used to. It's a whole different way to look at the healthcare benefit system. And then my second question is, what's the importance of wrapping the right tools around a consumer-driven health plan if you're going to offer it to your employee population?
Yeah, so it's a great question because I think, it's not just enough to offer a consumer-directed plan and even to just put some small communications around it. Otherwise, it's just a plan design.
Mm-hmm.
So you really do have to offer those tools and resources to provide greater transparency into healthcare costs. If you're transitioning from a plan that's got lower deductibles or even co-pays, because those still do exist, employees have to understand the costs and how to maximize the dollars in the HRA or HSA. So we've had some good experience in this place. We have a number of different tools that we make sure that are available not only just broadly to our membership, but especially with our consumer-directed plans. So self-service member portal, where the members can go to get access to tools and resources. We have a personal health record that integrates information from claim systems, wellness programs, self-reported data from our members, that it allows them to share that information with their healthcare teams. And the PHR can also help identify potential issues like dangerous drug-to-drug interactions, gaps in care, and helps bring that to the attention of the healthcare provider. One of the most important tools that we make available, and we're definitely seeing these types of tools emerging across the industry, are cost estimators. So we have a member payment estimator tool, which allows members to get real-time out-of-pocket cost estimates for more than 650 commonly used services. And it's based on the member's plan design, so takes into account deductible coinsurance, but also the negotiated rate with the particular provider that they're looking to see. And we found that for more than 30 of the most commonly selected healthcare services, when members are using these tools, they're choosing providers that are allowing them to save about $170 in out-of-pocket costs per service. And for the employer, that's about a $612 reduction in allowed expenses. So these tools are critically important for members to really get engaged in their health plan and into these consumer-directed plans. So again, not just a plan design change, you have to give them access to the tools and resources so that they can effectively navigate their plan.
So this is your suite of cost of care transparency tools you're talking about, right, Chris?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. What is Aetna's Healthy Actions Incentive Programs? What's that?
So we do offer incentives. Mm-hmm. That's our incentive program. It's a good point that you asked that question because we have seen that in terms of helping members understand and utilize their health care, we found some best practices.
Mm-hmm.
So this is allowing employers to get the most value of their offerings through their employees. So some of these things include comprehensive communication strategy, which we just talked about, but also combining wellness and care management programs and to drive engagement in those programs, and encouraging healthy behavior, incentives are a critical component of that. So, folks that have used these best practices have had cost savings. We talked about option versus total replacement. Those that are doing even option business, if they employ, wellness and care management and incentive programs, they're seeing cost savings almost as high as employers who completely switch over to health fund plans. So, and we've also seen over the years employers taking a different strategy. So if they've had a consumer-directed plan in place for several years, they may move away from that upfront funding of an HRA or an HSA in allowing employees to earn those dollars back through wellness incentives.
Chris, what's the, when you look, you know, and Dr. Neelman alluded to it in the previous segment, and from his physician background, he said, I love it when I see a patient who comes in and cares about their health care and and understands and asks me, they ask me the right questions around care. Do you see, from your traditional plans to your consumer-driven plans, is there a different knowledge base between those two plan members?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing it in terms of their rates of accessing care. So you guys are probably familiar with that popular criticism that's out there on consumer-directed plans.
Yeah.
You know, people with these plans are going to avoid necessary care. And our experience has, in fact, shown the opposite of that. So, mm-hmm. you know, there are members in our Aetna Health Fund plans, they're getting higher rates of preventive care. So they're getting preventive care from primary care docs about 11% more than members in a traditional plan. We've also found that they're getting those really important screenings at a higher rate, so things like cervical cancer, colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, mammograms, all of these at a higher rate than PPO members. I would say our experience, we've seen it range anywhere from 7 to 10%, depending upon the type of screening. We're also seeing higher rates of immunization. So, you know, the important distinction here on preventive care, we all know that it's now going to be covered at 100% because
right.
of the Affordable Care Act, but members in our plans have had 100% preventive care coverage for quite some time, and they're accustomed to actively managing their care. So we think that that's what's contributed to seeing a better rate of access of preventive care under these plans versus the traditional plans. And you know, it's kind of encouraging to see, so you're thinking, okay, they're accessing all this care more. What is that doing for costs? But in fact, members of these plans are actually spending less on most types of some of the other types of healthcare services. So things like specialist doctor visits, emergency room visits, and total pharmacy costs, those costs are being managed more effectively as well. So I think he was absolutely right, and it's very encouraging to see the engagement rate and the types of results that we're seeing with members in these plans.
Chris, we've got about a minute left on the program, and I want you to be able to tie this together for our audience and kind of give them one or two different takeaways from your health plan perspective on, you know, consumerism, HSAs, and what they need to really be focused on.
Yeah. So, you know, as we've talked about, I think important to note that consumer-directed plans are not going away. I think they're going to be an important aspect of an employer strategy, whether they're offering coverage on or off an exchange. Great way to avoid that that Cadillac or excise tax. But I would reinforce that it's more than just a plan design, and it's not about cost shifting. Really need to have strong communication strategy and wrap that with the tools and resources and incentives to create that consumerism feel and strategy more broadly. And you know, we've seen tremendous results, as I've said, 10 years of study that have demonstrated year over year the types of cost savings that can be achieved in these plans, not only for members in helping them save money, but also for the employer. So I think CDHPs are here to stay.
And with Aetna, I mean, you guys have always been a leader in there. Is there one thing that you hear from your employers around these plans all the time that they come back to you with?
Yeah, I would say very satisfied with the results. You know, our most recent study is that, you know, employers that replace their traditional plans with a consumer-directed plan are seeing a savings about $350 per member per year.
Mm-hmm.
And in the national account space, which is where I work, many of the larger customers are offering these plans. And the lower health care costs have resulted in savings of $20.8 million over a six-year period in our study. So that's pretty dramatic and impressive results, and I think that the increase and continued increase in membership in these plans are demonstrating that they do work and the employers believe in them.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the program today, and have a great weekend.
Great.
To the rest of our audience, please stay tuned for the last segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
This is Ron Bachman, Chairman of the Editorial Advisory Board for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. The IHC is a collaborative community for innovative health and benefit management solutions. If you're a stakeholder involved in any part of the healthcare system, you'll find the Institute the voice for healthcare consumerism. We invite you to see more about the organization at www.theihcc.com.
This is Cheryl Linker, host of the Master Gardener Hour on America's Web Radio, Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Join us as we keep things fun and interesting as we educate you in the world of master gardening.
Hi, this is Brent Macy, Managing Director for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. If you're a solution provider in this marketplace, I'd like to talk to you more about our corporate membership program that will allow you to showcase your solutions in front of our audience who will be making decisions on what they're going to be putting in place surrounding their healthcare benefit packages in 2013 and beyond. Contact me at 770-296-7276 to learn more.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like. You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Hey, this is Doug Field, CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, along with my co-host Brent Macy, and welcome back to the final segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio and our theme of celebrating the 10-year anniversary of HSAs. And, you know, we've got joining us today somebody that not only does he have a long arm of experience with HSAs, but he's sitting in an interesting catbird seat right now to take a look at all the different moving parts. And welcome to the program, Todd Berkeley, Principal, HSA Consulting. Hey, Todd.
Hi, thanks. Hey. Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. Long time no talk.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you recover from dinner yet?
I did. I went out to dinner with these two guys and John Young on my anniversary night. I haven't been forgiven by my wife for going out to dinner with you on my anniversary, so it'll cost me big, I'm sure.
Well, we really appreciate it. You know, you kind of put an interesting theme on your speaker questionnaire, and I want you to talk to that because I think it's very interesting. You talk about the best yet to come, taking a look at kind of the microwave history and the disruptive future of HSAs. You know, let's start from there. Talk about that.
Sure. Well, the microwave history, this 10 years, I've been associated with HSAs directly since 2005, mm-hmm. so I came in right after Exante, now Optum, had launched their HSA, and it has been a wild ride. I know some are disappointed that we're only 7% of the commercially insured population, and I agree it could be and should be a lot higher than that. But, boy, we've been through a lot. And for a company, and I'm coming from the banking perspective. I actually come from a consumer banking background, managed deposit products for some large institutions. And, you know, to come into this business where you've got three industries all coming together in one small account. You've got the healthcare industry, you've got the banking industry, and you've got the investment industry, none of which talk to each other very well, none of which understand each other. And there's all these handoffs with a consumer in the middle that's, frankly, often brought in against their will. Their employers change their insurance. They liked being chauffeured around. They liked that Cadillac plan. Thank you very much. I found, though, that even in that kind of environment, the consumer eventually, it's a little rough sometimes in the first couple months, but eventually learned to love this program. I think like 80-85% of people who are in these plans for a year or so will say this is the best thing that ever happened once they figure out how it's really changed their life. And so from a banker's perspective, kind of coming into this kind of an account, which, by the way, only has still about a $2,000 average balance. Mm-hmm. So you're making all this stuff happen. You're dealing with employers. You're dealing with brokers. You're dealing with health plans. You're dealing with the consumer. And it's very, there's a lot going on there. There's been a lot of investment by the pioneers in this space. And so the microwave history has really been, okay, how do we get these things up and going? How do we communicate with all these different partners? Now we've got to have investments, so we've got to connect that in. At one point, everyone had to have a line of credit. It was just demanded in the marketplace, and a bunch of the leading companies developed one, and then no one came and used it. It was more of a phantom need than an actual need. And then a lot of it has been just around how do you swallow, 100 or 200,000 accounts that all come on one day. And it's a huge operational challenge to really build the operational capability to be able to to open up all these new accounts, to educate people, to help them understand how the account works. At the same time, your existing customers are coming and making deposits often for the whole year in that month of January. So, I mean, between now and the middle of January, things are really, really rocking on the operational side of the house. And so there's just been a lot of good work done to get to where we are today.
You know, Todd, you know, from your banking perspective, you know, we were in a meeting yesterday in Minneapolis, and interesting perspective, and want to know if you see the same thing, that, you know, banks a year or two ago were saying, hey, how do we get out of this? You know, we're in it, but now let's get out of it. Now we see kind of the opposite happening, banks saying, no, we're going to stay and play, and even new banks coming in. What do you see from your seat?
Absolutely. I think it's been a bit of a blessing and a curse for the for the pioneer companies that have been here. They've put a lot of money into these accounts. They're not wildly profitable at this point. However, I think they look back at the experience with the IRA and 401k. You know, banks originally owned that space, and they put everybody's IRA into a CD, right? And then these little companies like Fidelity and Vanguard and you know, T. Rowe Price come out of nowhere and just completely stole that business away from them.
That's true.
And they missed the boat. And so I think a lot of banks look at it that way to say, if this thing is the, you know, if I could have a little piece of every dollar spent on health care, and if I could get the kind of, you know, deposit growth that I could get out of these accounts, it's a business I really have to be in. Some have stayed on the sidelines. I think they're starting to move right now. There's a lot of market entrance, and you know, being an independent consultant, I'm starting to see a lot of those kinds of companies.
Right.
Say, how do we enter this space? Or companies from different parts of the completely different companies coming in and eyeing this space. So I think you're going to see a lot of disruptive innovation over the next few years as this thing starts to come into the mainstream.
Todd,
go ahead.
We were up in Minneapolis with you guys. You know, we heard a personal story from someone when we were up there, and they had mentioned that they had a hospital bill that was in the millions of dollars, and had they had a traditional plan, they would have been in trouble. But yet they had an HSA with a high deductible and ended up only having to pay their deductible for the services. And one of the stigmas that's on HSAs is it's for the healthy and the wealthy. That's not necessarily true, is it?
No, absolutely not. And I would say, I mean, we fought that very, very hard in the early years. Mm-hmm. And frankly, from a banker's perspective, we've been, I think, very disappointed in the wealthier parts of our population. You know, according to the AHIP study that came out a couple years ago, and I think they're refreshing that now, the average $100,000 household only put in like $1,000 when they could put in six. It's hard to engage those wealthy people, but yet where I've seen tremendous engagement is on the lower end of the market. You know, as Dr. Neelman mentioned, a lot of small businesses, they're all in.
Yep.
So their entire population is in here. One of our early clients at Optum was a large fast food vendor. And they had all kinds of assistant managers, you know, fast food assistant managers that were in their stores that were in HSAs, and they were Pioneer. And you get in a focus group and talk to people like that, and they'd say, you know, I've never had a savings account before. My employer gives me money that's my money, and you know, I have $700 in my own HSA, and I can use that however I want. And even if I leave this company, I get to keep that money.
Yeah.
It's very empowering. And so I think it works across the spectrum. And actually, I think that came in handy in the next phase of the history, which was starting around 2007, 2008, when both we had a little threat of substantiation being imposed upon this, which we were very much against because we really see very little evidence of people spending their own money in the wrong ways. But also, there was a change in the political tide, you know, and George Bush had been, you know, the champion of these products. It, you know, at the time, it was not very popular to be aligned with George Bush as his industry, and we could see, you know, political winds changing, and so there were some real threats there that we could just get wiped off the map. And so we just started working as an industry, working together to educate lawmakers and others about how these things are working. And one of the slides I used to use in a lot of those meetings just went down President Obama's eight principles for health reform and showed how HSAs were working in the marketplace. They're getting people, you know, insurance. They're the most portable thing. That's one of your goals. You're trying to avoid bankruptcy. Well, the average out-of-pocket cost It's a statutorial limit to what you mentioned earlier, but on average, according to Kaiser, it's only $7,000. So you usually don't hear of someone losing their house because they had to pay a $7,000 bill.
Right.
Whereas if they're on a 20% traditional copay plan and they're paying a $1.2 million bill, they may lose their house.
Yeah.
And so our story as an industry was, you know, we're not looking for special favors. We're not saying they were the only thing we need, but we are saying we're a very positive force in this industry. And just leave us alone. Don't kill us. And as it turns out, I believe they've embraced us. As the, if there's an affordable part of the Affordable Care Act, it would be an HSA plan. And so I think whether Obamacare, you know, makes it or doesn't make it, I think the best is yet to come for HSAs. And I think a lot of that is going to be very disruptive, both just because the whole concept is disruptive. It's different. It's a completely different way of approaching the healthcare system, of thinking about your healthcare. And frankly, when you kick people in the wallet, especially men, when they realize I'm on the hook,
if
I don't start losing some weight and you know, taking care of my, you know, adult onset diabetes or whatever it is, I'm just hurting myself because no one's going to pay my bills like they used to. And so there's something about that, as you know, as Chris mentioned, people will get up, they'll take their preventive care, they'll do that colonoscopy.
Yeah.
They'll do the things they need to do to keep themselves healthy, because part of it is because they're spending their own money. They spend their own money different than they spend someone else's money.
Todd, we've got about a minute to go and, you know, enjoy this conversation. I want to give you a chance to kind of wrap this up for our audience from your perspective. Give them, you know, a couple takeaways you'd like to leave them with.
Sure. Well, I reiterate, I think the best is yet to come.
Yeah.
I think we're starting to see HSAs move into the mainstream. I think you're going to see massive growth and adoption. But not only growth and adoption, I think you're going to see innovation as the consumer comes to the forefront and as companies start making their products much more consumer-friendly. And we're seeing aspects of that throughout the HSA industry today. I actually own 12 HSAs myself, and I see in different offerings that they're starting to take an angle. One's doing innovation around the investment. One's doing innovation around how you manage your receipts. One's you know, pulling the FSA, HRA, HSA experience together. You're starting to see that happen on the edges. The other thing is that I think the pace of change is going to continue to accelerate. And part of that is because employers are gaining confidence. Part of that is because individuals are starting to assert themselves and demand different experiences. And then these new market entrants that could come in from anywhere are really going to bring the best of what they do into this space. And it's going to be a wild ride. I'm really looking forward. It's an exciting time to be a consultant. I'm really, really excited to have been you know, associated with the beginnings of the HSA product. And I think the best is yet to come. And so it's going to be fun.
Todd, thank you so much for joining us on the program today. Have a great weekend. And to the rest of our audience, we will see you next Friday for Healthcare Consumerism Radio.